This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937, Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Is it just me, or have we seen this movie already? The one where Congress can't really decide whether to save the economy or leave it to its own devices. You might remember it didn't end so well last time, so sit down, grab your popcorn, and enjoy the show one more time. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the American Public Transportation Association, committed to helping Americans save on gas and become energy independent at publictransportation.org. And by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build stronger customer relationships through email marketing. ConstantContact.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Today is Wednesday, the 1st of October. Good to have you here as we continue with Fallout, our coverage of the financial crisis on Wall Street. Truth be told, though, it's at least as much a Washington crisis now, which is why we'll spend some time today talking politics with a member of Congress, one who gave the thumbs down to the original bailout earlier this week. Congress never saw a spending opportunity it didn't like, so we'll look at how the $700 billion package has gotten even bigger. And today's explainer takes you deep inside federal accounting rules for a lesson in mark-to-market. After the House voted down the bailout package Monday, we had Oregon Democrat Peter DeFazio on to ask him about his no vote. We've got him back on the line today to talk about the latest proposal. Congressman, good to speak with you again.
Thanks, Guy. I appreciate the opportunity.
First things first, sir, is this new version of the bill going through the Senate going to do it for you?
Absolutely not. It is the same Paulson plan, which, in short, is what he started with. He gets $700 billion, unbelievable discretion in how he spends it. He can pick winners and losers on Wall Street. He can even buy credit card debt. He could probably buy pawn shop notes. I don't know. I mean, he can buy any kind of security under this authority. I don't buy the premise. I don't think it's going to solve the underlying. I know it's not going to solve the underlying problem with housing. And I don't believe it goes directly to the bank liquidity issue, which could be addressed much more simply and at less cost and risk.
Well, it has some of the things you were looking for. It's got changes to the SEC rules and mark-to-market. It's got a raise on the FDIC limits for bank insurance. Mm-hmm. What's not there that you want to see?
Well, how about reauthorize the certificates of net worth? So that the regulators can work with banks that are in temporary trouble but long-term are going to be fine to keep them from closing up shop, permanently ban naked short selling, put those things in, and then say, let's fence the money off and say, let's see if these measures work. I mean, I talked to the head of the Oregon Bankers. She said, look, if you do mark-to-market, you do the FDIC insurance, my members don't have any problems, and we don't need any of the $700 billion.
I know it's not necessarily your job in the House leadership, but count noses for me on a possible House vote on this Senate bill.
It's complicated. The Senate's trying to jam the House here. I mean, they've taken the Paulson-Bush bill, and they've added in a bunch of tax cuts, which on the Republican side of the aisle normally would attract votes. They put in mental health parity, which has tremendous attraction to liberals and progressives, and I mean, a whole lot of people across the board, actually, on that issue. So they're thinking they can buy the votes here, but I just think it's too big of a price at $700 billion, but maybe they will move enough votes.
Well, on that point, is there a sense among the leadership that something has to pass?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think everybody thinks something has to pass. But I think people feel that they need some sort of confirmation or stamp or push by Congress. So, you know, what I'm saying is if you could condition them drawing on this money to first implementing all these other measures, see if that takes care of the bank problem, which some people say it will. And the one other critical thing to me is don't put taxpayers on the line for the Paulson bet here.
Last time we spoke, Congressman, I asked you about your constituent services line and how those calls were running. You said pretty heavily against this bill. Any change since the last vote?
We're close to 6,000 emails and phone calls now. It's gone from 100-1 against to about 95-1 against.
Even with the Dow down 777 points the other day?
We got very few immediate calls on that. We had a few. We had people call from my district and identify themselves by name saying, look, I know I'm losing some money here, but, you know, markets go up, they go down, and we think you're doing the right thing long term for the country.
All right. Peter DeFazio, congressman from Oregon. He's a Democrat. Congressman, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Maybe you picked up on Representative DeFazio's displeasure with the Senate bill. He does have plenty of company on both sides of the aisle. So as he mentioned, to attract more votes, Senate leaders have added a number of sweeteners. But they ain't going to come cheap. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale has that part of the story.
The Senate version temporarily insures bank accounts up to $250,000. It also adds expiring tax benefits for small businesses and renewable energy projects, and it shields middle-class taxpayers from the onerous alternative minimum tax. The price tag for these extras is another $130 billion. But Senator Judd Gregg, the lead Republican on the Budget Committee, says the tax breaks should not be viewed as extra costs.
It's not an issue of adding $100 billion to this bill. Everybody knew this; these tax extenders were going to occur. There's no way we're going to let the solar or the wind credit lapse. There's no way we're going to hit 20 million people with AMT.
But Vermont's independent Senator Bernie Sanders thinks Americans earning more than $500,000 a year should pay for some of the bailout.
Given the fact that the top 1% of our population have made out like bandits economically since Bush has been president, it seems to me very wrong that the middle class has got to pick up the tab.
Business groups are lobbying hard for the rescue package. The Chamber of Commerce's Bruce Johnston thinks the Senate proposal has a better chance now that there's a little something for everybody.
The disaster relief package for the California wildfire areas, the Midwest floods, and Hurricane Gustav, another opportunity for members to step up to the plate.
Senate and House members report public sentiment toward a government rescue has become more favorable since the stock market dropped after the House defeat on Monday. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said today it's going to be Friday before the House takes up whatever the Senate does pass. And when it does, both Democratic and Republican leaders are going to have to deal with some GOP members who are pushing for a more market-based approach to the crisis. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer explains.
Some House Republicans have their own solutions to the financial crisis. They would cut federal spending and change the way overseas corporate profits are taxed. They would also make companies buy insurance on shaky subprime investments instead of having the government buy those assets outright. Columbia University economist Perry Mierling says firms would buy that insurance from the FDIC. If the company's subprime assets tanked, they would take a hit before the insurance kicked in.
The loss is like the deductible. Anything above that, anything unlimited amount, okay, the FDIC would take.
But Mierling says the insurance plan would probably cost the same as what the Senate plan envisions and would still leave taxpayers on the hook. Boston University economics professor Lawrence Kotlikoff agrees. He says the insurance proposals are so similar, they're not worth fighting over.
They shouldn't go to war over this issue with the House Republicans. If this is what it takes to get the House Republicans to support the bill, they should say fine.
But the Republicans may have to compromise on other things like spending cuts and tax breaks. That's because they're starting to get calls from angry constituents who watched the value of their 401ks plummet after the House rejected the White House plan. James Thurber teaches political science at American University.
It is not, in their mind, a big bailout of people who get very high salaries. It's a matter of their assets right now going down in the market.
Thurber says no one's going to ignore angry phone calls just weeks before the elections. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
All right, now that you know all about the politics, it's time to get back to the economics. We're a business program, after all. The Senate's bill would authorize the SEC to suspend something called mark-to-market accounting. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson got the assignment to explain, so what?
Well, for help explaining mark to market, I've come to Professor of Accounting Joshua Ronan at the Stern School of Business at NYU. Professor, what is mark to market?
It means that if you hold investments in a particular security, you quantify those securities on your balance sheet at the current market value.
But how do you know what the current value is today?
This is where the problem starts, because in an illiquid market, when there is a credit crunch, if you have a fire sale of securities, it's going to be a very low value. And that itself triggers downrating by rating agencies and potentially more capital requirements, hence the tendency of these institutions to ultimately become bankrupt.
In other words, Ronan says, if these institutions didn't have to value their assets at the current market price, when no one wants to buy them, they might be able to get through the credit crunch relatively unscathed. The argument for mark-to-market is it tells investors exactly what buyers are prepared to pay for a security. Cindy Fornelli, the executive director of the Center for Audit Quality, calls it fair value accounting.
Changing the rules, particularly midstream, would send a very bad message to investors that you can know what the current value of securities is as long as the news isn't bad. And then if the news is bad, we're going to hide that news from you and not let you know.
The fact is, the SEC already has the authority to suspend mark-to-market. But a strong push from Congress could be what it takes to finally overcome opposition within the industry. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
There was plenty of marking to market on Wall Street today. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. My big mouth at the end of the broadcast yesterday only wound up costing me about $10. Only 10 of you chimed in when I said I'd give you a dollar if you could tell me what financial institution San Francisco and Charlotte, North Carolina have in common. I was trying to set up the next week and a half here at Marketplace in a special part of our coverage of the financial crisis, a series we're going to call The Road to Ruin. I could give you the answer to the question, of course, but it'd be much more fun to bring in our two reporters who are out on the road to ruin and have them tell you. Tess Vigeland and Amy Scott are crossing the country to explore what Wall Street's meltdown is doing to individuals and businesses. Hello to you both.
Hey there.
Hello, Kai.
Amy, let's start with you. Where are you and why?
Well, Kai, I am in Charlotte, North Carolina, sitting in front of a major landmark here, the Bank of America Corporate Center at the corner of Trade and Tryon Streets. And I'm here because this is the modern headquarters of one of this country's most powerful institutions, Bank of America, which will soon become the world's largest brokerage after B of A agreed to acquire Merrill Lynch a few weeks ago. You know, the father of modern-day Bank of America, Hugh McCall, once told me here in Charlotte that Wall Street is here. This is where Wall Street wishes they were. You know, at the time it seemed a little grandiose, but maybe it wasn't so far-fetched after all.
Tess, what about you? You're up north, right?
I am. I'm at the Bank of Italy building at 1 Powell Street in San Francisco. And in fact, they're just turning around the trolley right now. And I wanted to give you a little bit of history for why we're here. This is a bank that was founded by A.P. Giannini. And in the 1920s, it merged with Bank of America. And he is really famous for keeping the bank up and running after the San Francisco earthquake of 1906. He would actually go out on the street and lend money and take deposits while all the other banks clamped down during the crisis. And of course, today, you've got a parallel. Bank of America buying up toxic assets that nobody else wants, including those of Merrill Lynch.
You bet. Amy, from where you stand, you can probably see a whole bunch of other bank towers besides Bank of America, no?
That's right. This is a major banking center. Wachovia is also here. And for years, there's been this sort of rivalry between the two banks with a kind of an arms race of shiny new office towers being built. But as you know, on Monday, Citigroup agreed to buy Wachovia's banking operations. Citi has said it will keep the combined retail bank based here, but analysts are predicting several thousand layoffs. And obviously, this is a huge blow for Charlotte.
Tess, what about you in San Francisco? Are there still signs of Bank of America at that old Bank of Italy building?
Yes, in fact, I'm looking at a branch right now. Some folks are taking money out of the ATM. But I have to tell you, what was once this classic old marble and cast iron fortress, you know, it promised safety for your money, Well, Kai, right now it is a peon to consumerism that wants to take your money. It is a massive Forever 21 store.
Oh, man. This is day one of what's going to be a week and a half road trip for you guys. We're going to meet in St. Louis a week from Friday and do the broadcast from there. Where are you going and what are you going to find in between?
Well, right this minute, Kai, I'm going to head over and try to get some soul food a few blocks away from here. But I'll be leaving tonight for Charleston, West Virginia, and then on to Pittsburgh, Youngstown, Ohio, Detroit, and eventually meeting up with you and Tess in St. Louis. And we're expecting to bring stories from people across the country about how this financial crisis and this economy is affecting them.
Tess, what about you? Where are you going between there and St. Louis?
Well, first I'll be heading to Reno, where I am told there are casinos that rival Wall Street. Then I'll be heading to Salt Lake City and Denver, of course, a swing state, where we'll take a look at how this is affecting voter decisions on the presidential race. Then Lincoln, Nebraska, Kansas City, Missouri, and then we'll be meeting you in St. Louis.
All right, you guys, we'll see you there. It is the road to ruin. Marketplace's Tess Figland and Amy Scott on the road for us. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Coming soon to a theater near you, $1 billion worth of digital upgrades. Five big movie studios announced a deal with JPMorgan Chase and Blackstone, the private equity group, today. Gutsy move, wouldn't you say? Asking for $1 billion in an exceedingly tight credit market. But that does kind of make the point that there is money to be had out there if you've got the wherewithal to pay substantial interest for it. For companies that aren't quite so big, though, the credit squeeze is very, very real. From the Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
David Richard is in a bind. He's looking for an unsecured credit line of just $25,000 to $50,000 for his web design firm in Arlington, Virginia.
My current bank essentially told us that, well, we've given you some credit and that we probably won't be able to give you any more. So she was essentially telling me to go to her competitors.
Which hasn't worked either. The second big bank didn't even call back. Now he's trying a smaller bank. Richard's got plenty of clients, but he needs that line of credit to keep the business running while he waits for them to pay their bills.
We have to pay our employees every month, and you know, invoices usually have a 45 to 60 day cycle. So during that time, we need to fill in the blanks.
Up in Boston, Jennifer McKinley's having similar problems. Her company, called Core, sells high-end skincare products to salons and retailers, but she can't get the money she needs to expand.
Sales are up 55% year-on-year from last year. I'm adding new distribution every week. It's profitable. My personal credit score is excellent. There's not a single bank out there that's willing to give me even a teeny tiny line of credit.
And do you have any employees at the moment?
I don't. I'm absolutely at the stage of the business where were I able to just get a small line of credit, I would be hiring.
McKinley says she can hang on doing all the work herself for a little while, but she may have to take the business back to her native New Zealand if cash doesn't start flowing in the U.S. economy soon. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Coming up, sex, drugs, and high finance.
The same area of the brain that reacts to rewards, things like food and sex and heroin, to good things, also react to planning revenge.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials gave back just under 0.2% today. 19 points, finished at 10,831. The NASDAQ lost 1%, 22 points, closed at 2,069. The S&P 500 retreated 0.4%, 5 points, ended the day at 1,161. The car business isn't getting any better. September sales at Ford were down 35%. Its stock skidded 12.5% on that news. General Motors monthly numbers weren't as clunky, down only 15% or so. GM shares idled pretty much in neutral. Airline stocks soared as crude oil slipped more than $2 a barrel to settle around $98.50. AMR, that's American Airlines, Delta, Northwest, and U.S. Airways all recorded double-digit gains. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 3.73%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 888-VANGUARD. And by Gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about the economy at Gather.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet. Want more from Marketplace's special coverage on the fallout from America's financial crisis? It's all on our website. You'll find special podcasts, staff blogs, and an interactive map of our road trip across the country. Go to marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at events coming up Thursday. The Natural Gas Supply Association previews the gas market for customers this winter. The FDA holds a hearing on the use of over-the-counter cough and cold medicines for kids. And Governor Sarah Palin and Senator Joe Biden take the stage for the vice presidential debate at Washington University in St. Louis. I'm Caitlin Carroll.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. Maybe you disagree, but I think there's something visceral going on here in this debate about the bailout bill. There have been dire warnings from people who know pretty much all there is to know about the workings of high finance that if we don't do something, bad things are going to happen. Politicians have been saying the same thing, worth noting because politicians don't like to deliver bad news. Still, a majority in the House voted against a bailout on Monday, in large part because they were swamped by complaints from their constituents. Those are constituents who, it stands to reason, would be harmed by whatever bad things happen, but who seem to really still want to stick it to Wall Street. Dan Ariely is a behavioral economist at Duke University. Dan, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
What is it about the human condition that just wants revenge out of a scenario like this?
Well, there's actually quite a few things, but let me first describe to you a little experiment that we and other people have done. It's called the trust game. Now, imagine that you and I each get $10,
right,
and you're the first mover, and you decide whether to give your $10 to me or to keep it. If you keep it, we both go home. If you pass it to me, that $10 quadruples. So now I have your $10 that became 40 plus my 10, I have $50.
Mm-hmm.
I can split it in two and give you half, and I go get half, and we both go home happy, or I can take the whole $50 and go home.
And I have nothing.
And you have nothing. Now, here's the kink. What happened after we do this game, and I take the $50 and go home, you have a chance to take revenge against me.
Uh-huh.
What if I tell you, look, for every dollar you spend, I will lose $2. Would you take revenge against me?
Well, yeah, because you're leaving with 50 bucks, and I had nothing.
That's right. When you do this experiment in a PET machine, in a machine that scans people's brains,
mm-hmm,
what we see happening is that the same area of the brain that reacts to rewards, things like food and sex and heroin, to good things, also react to planning revenge, which basically means that revenge is actually rewarding.
But let me ask you this. In the present circumstance with the bailout bill, arguably the thing was designed to make everybody's life a little bit better. Whether or not they believe that, I suppose, is a relevant question. But by calling their congressman and saying, vote no because we want to punish, under your theory, the Wall Street people, don't they sort of hurt themselves?
That's right. But right now what we're doing is we're willing to sacrifice money. The same way that you were willing to sacrifice $3 or $7 mm-hmm to punish me, people are willing to suffer to get this, you know, I don't know what's a polite way to call these people on Wall Street, but people are willing to lose money to get those people to suffer more. In fact, I've asked people about this. Everybody feels this anger. They have violated, in a very important way, a social contract, in the same way that I would have violated the social contract of you giving me your $10 and me walking away with $50.
Given our motives for revenge,
yeah,
is there a way that Congress can shape a bill that's going to make it acceptable to people whose constituents really want to punish Wall Street?
Yes. So I think we need to include revenge in the bill. And, you know, there was discussion about capping CEO salaries, which I think went a small
way into revenge. But I think there are two ways to include revenge in the bill. One way is to say every time we're going to nationalize something, we're going to take the stock option of these people in these banks, right? We will make them pay for nationalizing it. That's one approach. The second approach is to build into the system future revenge. So another thing we can do is we can decide that the bill will actually force us to create a new code of punishment for people in Wall Street. And we have an opportunity here where the meltdown is so dramatic that we feel there is a need to go back and try and reshape the whole system. And that might actually be very, very useful in the long term.
Dan Ariely is a professor of behavioral economics at Duke University. His book on these sorts of things is called Predictably Irrational. Dan, thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We read you some of our letters yesterday, just a small sampling of the loads of email we've gotten from people who are really angry about this bailout or rescue package, or call it what you will. What's not so clear to many more of you is exactly how we got here in the first place. Investigations into this crisis are beginning to show that when it came to the exotic securities at the heart of the credit freeze, not even the experts, the people doing the buying and selling, really knew what they were getting into. So we asked the marketplace players for a refresher.
All right. So glad to hear the Union of Mothers and Nurses Pension Fund is keen to invest with us, Mr. Moron.
Actually, that's Marone.
Oh, do pardon me.
It happens all the time. Now, we really took a hit when Lead Paint Toyco went under, so we'd like some big, quick returns here.
Then have I got the product for you. It's called a reverse sub-micro-standard mortgage shadow security. And do you hold a degree in rocket science?
Nope.
Well then, simply put, what we do is take semi-insured debts that have been sold to us from inelastic bubble markets, vertically resell, then unbundle the revenues according to Moody's astrologarithm. Astrologarithm, which gives a monetized valuation that has itself been subdivided into A3 and G-minus pumpkin patch. You following?
Not at all.
Great. Me neither, really. This thing was invented by some eggheads we keep in a cave.
Please continue.
Right. So I think the Q grades are dumped and leveraged upwards across 25 underplumberies. Our unicorn gives it a kick, and presto, you've got 300% annual growth.
Now, you just said unicorn. Is there such a thing?
Kind of. Honestly, I don't know. Don't care.
Well, you also said 300%, so I'm sold.
Okay, how much you want?
How about far more than we can afford?
Sweet!
Great doing business with you, Mr. Exploiter.
Actually, that's exploitier.
Whatevs.
Rico Galliano and John Raby were the marketplace players for us today.
Marketplace is supported by the American Public Transportation Association, helping America go green. You can calculate your carbon savings at publictransportation.org. And by Putnam Investments, offering more of what you want in a retirement plan. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note to pick up on the thread John Dimsdale started for us today about what else has been tacked on to the Senate's version of the bailout bill. I downloaded it this morning, picked the page at random, and just started reading. Page 297, changes to the child tax credit. Page 298, tax relief for film and television productions. Page 300, and I sort of can't figure out what this has to do with the credit squeeze. But anyway, certain wooden arrow shafts, not more than 5/16 of an inch in diameter, apparently they're no longer subject to excise tax. If you want to see it for yourself, and who could blame you, we've got a link on our website. It is marketplace.org. And that, on this Wednesday afternoon, is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today the Dow fell 19 points, that's a 10%. The NASDAQ lost 22 points, 1%. The S&P 500 dropped 5 points, 0.4% there. Ravi Karman, Stephen Colon, Eric Johnson, Jeff Peters, Aaron Scott, and Phil Stearns engineer the program for us. Coming up next time, we're going to take a look at New Jersey's relationship with the Big Apple.
I view it not as a big brother, as a gargantuan brother, and our fates are inextricably entwined, for better or worse.
And fallout, our coverage of the financial crisis, picks up early tomorrow on the Marketplace Morning Report with another installment of The Road to Ruin. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Hope you can join us for all of that tomorrow. We'll be right back.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.